Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
You're listening to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast. New Churches is an online hub for the mission of church multiplication. Here you'll find the resources and training you need to get started, as well as a community of church planting and multi-site experts to help you thrive. My name is Daniel Lim, and I'm here with Ed Stetzer.
And hello.
That was such an awkward pause slash what are you eating?
Well, we're only on like the 500 plus episode, so I haven't really got this down as a science yet.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, so for today's episode, now just for context, because obviously things shift and rapidly shift and change as the weeks go by, we are recording this on June 15th. So June 15th, we are now a few weeks into everything that happened around, I mean, it's been a couple months since the Ahmaud Arbery stuff came out, and then we have the George Floyd stuff, and then the riots, and that's, so just for context, that's been a couple weeks. Within, as all of that was coming out, this question was submitted by one of our listeners. And I'll just read the question out. And just for context, knowing that this is coming out now mid-July, things might have changed, but we just want to kind of timestamp it in light of what we're talking about. So here's a question. This individual basically said, hey, I've noticed that the church doesn't often live out the importance of reconciliation with each other. So no wonder the culture around us doesn't. This was his comment. And then the question was, how do we start new churches that become an answer to the John 17 prayer around unity?
Yeah, and I love Jason's heart. We know each other for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is the, you know, I think part of that relates to even the setup of your question. So, for example, you know, I some of my African-American pastor friends invited me to join them at a march in, you wouldn't necessarily know the city, it's called Bronzeville. But so Bronzeville is what do you call it, is kind of the heart, it's called the Black Metropolis, one of the hearts of the African-American community. Mm. And they asked me to come march with them. It was a faith leaders march, and it was a peaceful protest. And so we joined in, and it was fascinating to me how many pastors who were, I mean, it was overwhelmingly African-American, but so I think all the pastors who are friends of mine went to the march, you know, the ones I kind of hang around with here. I mean, so, you know, so Presbyterians and Baptists and Pentecostals. So I think as we marched through Bronzeville, that was a John 17 kind of moment. Mm. I think there are ways that pastors, and I think part of, it's interesting too, we did probably like a lot of people did some panels at our church, but we had John Kelly, who's a pastor in the Chicago area. And he it was interesting because he started the panel by saying, I'm just tired of being on panels. And I thought it was interesting because I could totally get that because, you know, these are the times when everyone calls the African-American pastor in town and says, hey, can you be on a panel with me? And let's talk about racial reconciliation. It's like, well, where is that the rest of the time? Yeah. But what I really liked about, so, you know, I'm a part of High Point Church and I'm the teaching pastor there. And what I loved about what John said is I'm here because of Ron. I think you probably know Ron Zappia, the pastor. But everybody who was on the panel were actually people that Ron had been engaging with for years. Mm-hmm. You know, in January, I know January seems like 27 years ago, but we had Eric Mason in to our men's conference to talk about issues of racial justice from his new book. You know, John Perkins at the men's conference a few years before that. So one of the things that I thought was super helpful was that our church was already engaged in these conversations. And I think that looks like John 17. What I don't think looks like John 17 is every time there's a national crisis that we try to make new Black friends to help articulate our commitment to racial justice. Here's the deal. Be doing that in 2021. And, you know, so start now. And one of the things I love being able to walk through, you know, I'm actually on a, we have about 15 pastors, kind of, we have a little text group that we use. And about a fifth of them are African-American. And so people just had questions. How and the texts are flying back and forth. So how best should I respond to this, Pastor? Mm. And the explanation and more. And so it's not like I gotta go whip up some new friends, but I can actually say, how can I be helpful to my friends? So what I would say is, you know, Jason, I mean, most of you don't know who Jason is, but Jason has been in the rural or traditional old South, been in Orlando, planted a church, now serving in Nashville. This to build those relationships is good every day. And maybe it starts now, but don't just call up your Black friend when you have a crisis. Be in kind of community, a mutual learning community. And in doing so, I think the end result will be that you'll be looking more like John 17, that kind of unity that Jesus prayed for all year round.
Yeah, that's huge. And it goes beyond tokenism. It goes beyond even just responding to this cultural moment at, you know, right now as well. It goes to this sense of, okay, what does my approach to lifelong learning look like as it relates to reconciliation? I mean, even reading, I mean, there's a lot of new books and a lot of books that have been highlighted, White Fragility by Robin DiAngelo. I mean, just name them one after another. There are so many that are out there, but I'm just even thinking Miroslav Volf's Exclusion and Embrace that I read during seminary way back when. And it's literally, I mean, the guy's, he's talking about more from a European perspective, but there's just this sense of how do we all on the one side continue to learn and continue to grow and continue to understand what we don't know. I think on the other hand, it's that sense of, hey, I don't see the world. I don't see the world the same way that other people see the world, and knowing how our cultural context fits into that, right? So, Ed, the way that you view the world is different as a white guy is different than the way that I view the world as an Asian guy, as would be different than the way that a First Nations individual would see it in Canada, or a Francophone and a French Canadian, or a Black person, or, you know, just go down the list. We're all viewing this dynamic around race and power and all of these dynamics differently. So it's just that sense of, hey, how do we come not with a posture of, hey, I have it all together, or even from that posture of, hey, I have the power, I'm setting the table, but really from that perspective of a learning posture.
Yeah, I think one of the things, I mean, that the table being set. So, you know, it's, if you're, you know, I try to think to myself for my African American pastor friends that because I want to have my predominantly Anglo audience, and all of our audiences are predominantly Anglo because, you know, North America is still predominantly Anglo, at least in cultural power, but also in numbers, and so evangelicalism in particular. So I know that most of the people who are going to listen even to this are Anglo. Most of the people who might listen to a broadcast we do are Anglo. Or read Christianity Today. So I asked myself, how could I allow them to, these Anglo listeners and readers, to better hear from African Americans, particularly of evangelical belief and practice, because I think they're more likely to listen. So, you know, after Ferguson, and this was very controversial after Ferguson, I did a series called It's Time to Listen. And I said, and basically, you know, I'm asking Anglo leaders, and I invited, you know, basically the speakers at Anglo conferences, you know, and I think conference lineups have built a better reputation for being more diverse. And so I thought to myself, you know, a lot of Anglos would have heard of these people. So it's not people that, you know, you didn't hear of or someone you saw on, you know, on the news channel you didn't like, but it's, and so what I did is just asked them to write, why are you experiencing this post-Ferguson or current Ferguson and post-Ferguson experience differently? Because the polls say they are. White evangelicals had a very different view of what went on in Ferguson than African-Americans in general. Mm-hmm. And so the end result is I did a series called It's Time to Listen, and people hopefully did listen. So I was kind of taking that same posture when after George Floyd was killed, and I reached out to several African-American pastors and a few Anglos. And what I asked was to James Meeks. You probably necessarily wouldn't know James Meeks, but if you're in the Chicagoland or in Illinois, you do. He's sort of the, I don't know, he's the key figure, African-American leader. He was a former state senator, very well known. And so I didn't ask to, hey, would you come on my platform? But I did ask, he asked me to come down to the march in Bronzeville and then asked me to come up front with him. And, you know, so I'm in the picture carrying the banner at the front of the long march of thousands of people because I was glad to be an ally. But I asked him, would it be possible if afterwards you, me, Charlie Dates, and several others that I brought onto the call, but Charlie Dates and James and I were in the march together, could we go to your church and have a conversation there? And so we stayed in the South Side of Chicago, which won't mean anything to you if you're not from here, but that's the predominantly African-American community. And the community was very hard hit. It's been hard hit economically. The protests were centered there. The riots disproportionately impacted there. In almost every crisis, the poor are the ones who get hurt the most. And so it's a tricky thing. I'm not saying it's bad because I invited James and John Jenkins on my radio show, but I thought I wanted to also be on their space and then invite Anglos to listen in.
Yeah.
And I think ultimately that listening is key. And one of the super things that's encouraging, and the New York Times bestseller list, and both in general and in Christian books, has flipped from the self-help books to overwhelmingly, matter of fact, most books written by African-American authors kind of explaining, in the case of evangelicals, explaining some of the, you know, what does the Bible teach and more, you know, they're sold out. Mm-hmm. And that never happened before. Mm-hmm. What an amazing moment this will be. You know, I participated in two marches in Wheaton. Now, you know, if you've never been to, you've been to Wheaton, but, you know, Wheaton is, I mean, it's Western Chicago, suburbs of Chicago. So it's probably more diverse than a lot of communities where people are listening, but not overwhelmingly diverse. But to see, you know, walking through peaceful, we actually had a lament march for some of our faith leaders. This could be in many ways a turning point that is encouraging, but I think they're still listening. And one of the things we're hearing when we're listening from African-Americans, and we should say too that Canada, you know, obviously there are no African-Americans in Canada kind of by definition, because that's an American phrase, but visible minorities is the language used in Canada. And there's issues of in racial injustice in Canada. I mean, you could connect with the Haitian community in Halifax last time I was there. And you'll find that this is true in all kinds of places. And so, but listening, and in the case of the African-American experience, lamenting with African-Americans, I think is a good first step for a lot of Anglo pastors to do. Now, I don't know. I'd be interested for you to weigh in too, because you're not Asian American. I mean, I guess, you didn't get citizenship when you were here. So you would be Asian Canadian, yeah. Mm-hmm. But Korean Canadian specifically. So how do you, as a person of color, but who's in a different context and world and nation, how would you recommend? What would your words of wisdom be?
Yeah, it's been an interesting thing to navigate, being on the Canadian side of the border. And even, I think the thing that hit us the most, Christina and I, was how one of the police officers was Asian American. And with the George Floyd, the murder there, and one of the guys who was doing crowd control, he was Asian American, and he didn't say anything. And what was fascinating, we read this article where a lot of the oftentimes Asian Americans are seen as the model minority. And a lot of what was fascinating is, based on the cultural background, there's that sense of passivity, or there's that sense of, hey, I'm just going to keep my head down, work hard, and prove myself right. But the interesting thing is, for Asians, they're actually, their privilege or their status, quote unquote, was very much built on the backs of African Americans. And the struggle, and there's obviously been a ton of racism towards Asians as well, but it was not to the extent of the African Americans, and it was built on. So it was just such a fascinating article, and that is really what flipped the script for Christina and I. And we were like, man, non-response. And this is something that I've been saying at my church all throughout this time. Is I was like, guys, non-response is not a response. Like, we can't just sit by and let this go or just think, oh, as Canadians, it doesn't affect us. Because no, systemic racism exists in Canada as well. It looks different, but it exists here as well. So there's so much learning that needs to happen. So it really is just, how do we just continue to be in a posture of lifelong learning about this? Not rather than just letting the news dictate what we learn and don't learn.
Yeah, I love the you use word learning. I mean, the three L's here: listen, lament, and learn are three good steps to take now. And then I would say a fourth, you know, kind of lean in on some of the justice issues. We've already seen in Chicago stalled police reforms move forward. There's still challenges, you know, with some of the policies and more, sometimes even around that are opposed by police unions. And so it's so there's some leaning in to do, but probably start with to listen, lament, and learn. And then in kind of partnership and solidarity with African-American leaders, figure how best to lean in.
Yeah, I love that. Listen, lament, learn, and lean in. Awesome. Well, thanks again for listening to our New Churches Q&A podcast, and we will catch you guys next time.